Chapter 31. Time, broken out into the moments between trigger pulls, Jazz drops to her knee and faces the coming horde as the others flee. The long rifle in her hand, eye against its scope, down there, toward the entrance, they pour out. A flash of corroded metal, piston legs, dented chest plates, long, gangly, many-jointed limbs.
Droids, she thinks.
Mad lunatic droids, each different from the last. Glowing eyes, mechanized whales. They rush down the passageway, some 30 meters off, surging forward like feral things, like the bristle-backed boar wolves of Endor, running on all fours, up the walls, skittering along the crumbling ceiling like spiders. The slug thrower launches round after round. They drop one by one. She takes the legs out from the first. It crashes down, neck breaking as it hits. A spark as the shot punches through the metal skull of one, and it tumbles into another of its swarm. They shriek and screech. She fires again, and one of their skulls pops off, clanging against the wall with a loud echo. That's when she sees. They're not droids. They're something else. Creatures. Black-eyed things. Noseless. Mouths open, showcasing a pincushion of wild needle teeth. The thing that loses its skull plate dashes to the side, grabs it, and reaffixes it before joining the rushing throng anew. 25 meters. 20. 18. Closer. Closer.
There's too many,
she thinks. A dozen here, and more pouring out of the factory. A whole tribe of these things.
A hive.
But she has the slugs. She can do this. But there, Aunt Sugi's voice whispering inside her ear.
You have to know when to run, girl.
That, a message to Jazz only weeks before Jazz took her advice. Maybe how Sugi meant it, maybe not. But she ran away from her home planet. A terrible place. A strange place, Iridonia. Brutal and unforgiving. 15 meters. Both her hearts beat fast in tandem, outracing the speed with which she can pull the trigger. 12 meters. They shriek and click and swarm. A hand at her shoulder. A voice numb and almost lost underneath the ringing in her ears. It's the boy.
We have to go, he's saying. There's too many. I can do this,
she roars. But she can't. She knows she can't.
You have to know when to run, girl.
Now is the time to run. The stories were true, Temin realizes, from a certain point of view. What came spilling out of that old droid factory weren't ghosts. The place wasn't haunted by specters or force wraiths. And it isn't haunted by old malfunctioning droids either. It's the Oogteen. When he goes back to get Jazz, he sees one. What they thought were droids were just the Oogteen wearing droid parts like armor. The pale, feral things, near humans but far enough to still be monsters, usually keep to the jungles and canyons. Sometimes, though, they find caves to live in. The catacombs beneath Mira aren't just caves, he realizes. They're a whole cave system. Maybe they connect out elsewhere, to the Canyon of Akar, or even all the way to the coastline far south. This pack has been living down here for a long time, hasn't it? It doesn't even matter now, because he and his friends are besieged, chased, and the monsters are gaining ground fast. Jazz turns suddenly. She fires a shot at a half-collapsed stone beam hanging above the passageway. One shot, it cracks, starts to splinter. Two shots, those cracks spread, but the pack is almost upon them, gibbering and screaming like men on fire. Again, Temin tries to pull her along, but she takes one last shot. The beam crashes down. Water streams along with it. It crushes the front line of the monsters. It slows them down. For a moment. They run once more, rounding a corner. Here it goes up,
and he knows that they're nearing the ground underneath the Royal District. Another half-hour walk, and they'll be at or beneath the Satrap's palace. Mr. Bones skids to a halt. He sets down the box of detonators. His astromech arm spins up, blurring the air. His other arm snaps back, revealing the vibroblade. Bones makes sounds like the Oob team, threatening howls, barks, gargled blasts of mechanical distortion. Temin yells at him, tells the droid now isn't the time. But Bones is programmed to protect Temin. That is the programming that overrides all else. Fierce, loyal, psychotic. The Oob team swarm up over the broken beam. Temin hears his mother calling for him. He tries to tell Bones to move, even pulling on the battle droid's arm. But he doesn't budge. Then he looks down, near the droid's feet. The box of detonators.
The box of detonators! I've got a plan!
He yells at Bones.
Come on! Come on!
He grabs one of the detonators out of the box. Just one. Then he pops it open, spins the top to its shortest fuse, and flings it back into the box from whence it came. Then he yells,
Run! Everybody, run!
Temin bolts forward, his legs straining, all parts of him tensing up as he waves everyone away. Bones sprints alongside of him, the droid's feet smashing hard into the brick. The battle droid yells,
I will go boom!
6 seconds, the Oob team swarm. 5 seconds, Nora waves her son and the others on. 4 seconds, the droid-clad monsters rush up to the box. 3 seconds, Jazz pivots, fires her rifle over Temin's shoulder. 2 seconds, Bones cackles. 1 second, Temin winces and dives to the ground as... He lifts his face from the ground. His head pulses like the engine of an idling speeder bike. Temin pushes himself up on his hands, dust and rocky bits raining down from his hair. He flinches just in time to see Jazz leap forward and jam the butt of her gun into the faceplate of one of the Oob team. A protocol droid face painted in what looks like blood, the mask rent in half with a jagged rip, so it looks to be some nightmarish mouth. And the thing pinwheels and goes down. Bones stomps on it again and again. Temin thinks,
it didn't work. The plan didn't work.
But then he braces himself against the wall and pulls himself up. Jazz offers him a hand and he takes it. Two of the Oob team lie on the broken floor. Here, the floor is crooked, sporadic tile, all of it shattered. The tunnel is sealed.
Stragglers,
Jazz says, gesturing toward the two monsters. Up close, he can see their pale flesh underneath the armor, revealed between the joints like the flesh of a krill crab when you turn it over to get at its meat.
You okay?
He nods numbly.
That was a good idea,
Jazz says, and then she quick steps out of the way as Nora launches herself at Temin, wrapping her arms around him.
It was a good idea,
Nora says. She kisses his brow. Idly, he thinks.
Even though I'm dirty?
That's what a mother does.
Thanks,
he says, that high-pitched tone still moving from ear to ear, his head still pounding like heavy rain on an old fuel drum. Sinjir steps up, dusting off his officer's uniform.
Let's not all crack open a case of fizzy drinks just yet. I'll casually remind you all that the boy just detonated our key into the Satrap's palace.
Yes,
Temin thinks.
Now we'll have to turn back around and everything will be fine again.
We can't go back,
Jazz says.
Guess it's over,
Temin says with a shrug. He tries not to play it too eagerly.
It'll all shake out. We'll find a way back up to the surface and...
Sinjir lifts his head.
Way up to the surface? Can you find us a way out nearby?
Abso-fragging-lutely,
Temin says.
Language,
his mother says.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, hold on.
He unrolls the map, his heart beating a kilometer a minute in his chest.
We're in the clear.
His second thoughts about everything no longer matter.
Here, close by. 5 minutes and we're there. Should take us right up into the old banking clan building.
Not us, Sinjir says. Me. That earns him some quizzical looks. I'm dressed for the occasion of duplicity, he says, demonstrating his officer's uniform with an open-handed gesture. I'll find a way up and out. I'll contact the Imperials at the palace. I should be able to find the frequency because... Oh, that's right. I was an Imperial with high-level clearance. And then I'll get them to open the door for us. Jazz frowns.
And how do you plan to do that?
That is the brilliant part. I'll tell them the tunnels are their one safe way out of the palace.